Hello and welcome to the AAMFT podcast, your all-access pass to the latest news, developments, and thought leaders in the world of systemic therapy, where we strive to relate, educate, and innovate one episode at a time. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Karam, and we're brought to you by the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. In addition to featuring unique conversation and interviews with established experts, our show provides information and education on direct practice and emerging trends in the MFT profession. For more information, please visit us at aamft.org. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Step inside, take a seat, let's explore the world of therapy like never before. Dr. Eli's here, bringing voices so bright, innovating, relating, and shedding new light. It's AAMFT, where wisdom meets passion. Come listen and see, talking trends, deep insights, and stories so bold. For MFT minds, the future unfolds. Systemic, my friends, we relate, educate, and innovate again. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. We relate, educate, and innovate again, one episode at a time. At a time.
Welcome to the AAMFT podcast, and today we're talking about a topic that affects more families than you might think, estrangement. Family estrangement is often misunderstood. It's not just falling out or a temporary silence. It's a deliberate process where one or more family members create and maintain emotional or physical distance. And although it impacts nearly one in four families, the stigma remains strong, especially for those who don't see reconciliation as possible or even healthy. Joining me today is Carl Melvin, a therapist and expert in the area of estrangement. And we're going to unpack his family estrangement inquiry model. We'll look at how clinicians can help adult clients navigate this complex terrain, understanding the roots, mapping the current dynamics, and crafting meaningful interventions that honor each client's unique needs and boundaries. Last year, Carl wrote Navigating Family Estrangement, Helping Adults Understand and Manage the Challenges of Family Estrangements, in an effort to offer guidance to not just professionals who work with cutoff and estrangement, but also our clients, those people who are personally struggling with this complex and painful situation. Combining research from a range of different fields with his decade-long clinical experience, Carl's book is supplemented with five comprehensive case studies to demonstrate practical strategies that address these estrangement challenges. Carl Melvin is an Irish-based psychotherapist. He specialized in this area of family conflict and estrangement for the last 13-plus years. He's an accredited therapist with the IACP, that's the Irish Association of Counselors and Psychotherapists, and he has a master's degree in counseling and psychotherapy. This practical and compassionate conversation that you're about to hear will deepen your understanding on a topic that touches many of our clients, but is too rarely talked about. Let's get into it. More healing begins with you. Are you looking for a career with new challenges and opportunities? California Correctional Healthcare Services provides mental health care within the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. We're hiring marriage and family therapists to help individuals heal, grow, and reshape their future. Join a dedicated team, receive state benefits, and make a difference. Your career, your calling, your chance to make an impact. Take the next step. Apply today at cchcs.ca.gov/careers. That's cchcs.ca.gov/careers. Eli, back with you. So happy to be joined by Carl Melvin. Now, Carl, in the 7 seasons of this show. You are our first expert from Ireland. So I am so happy to get to talk to you. The topic today is something that systemic therapists, especially family therapists, know well, the topic of family estrangement. People like to know the background of the expert. So talk about, in general, your psychotherapeutic origin story, so to speak, and then what got you interested in working with family estrangement.
Okay, firstly, thank you so much for reaching out and asking me to do this. And I'm very flattered to be the first Irish person today. And another thing, Eli, you might find this funny, my son's name is Eli as well.
So there's a strong name, strong start, Carl.
Thank you so much. Look, as you say, my name is Carl Melvin. I am from Ireland, originally from Dublin, but I moved to the west of Ireland with my wife and kids a couple of years ago. And I am a clinical psychotherapist working predominantly in private practice, although I've worked in different contexts over the years. And in my clinical work, pretty much from day one, I inadvertently came to specialize in a phenomena which is incredibly prevalent, incredibly painful, and incredibly complex. And that phenomena is family estrangement. But when I first started working with it, and this would have been in 2011, I wouldn't have used that term to describe it. At that stage, people were using terminology like dysfunctional family, toxic family, and maybe saying things like walking on eggshells and different language and different ways of describing their family dynamic, but not necessarily hanging their hat on family estrangement. But I think our understanding of what family estrangement is has broadened over the last 3 years, and thankfully due to the research and the work of different clinicians across the planet, I decided to go back to college to do my master's. And I was looking for a topic for my dissertation, and I knew it was something related to family relationships, because again, that was a key area within my work and complex family conflict. And I happened upon the term family estrangement, and I really immersed myself in the literature, and I was struck by just how familiar it was, especially the case studies. Obviously, I was learning a lot around the terminology and the concepts around family systems, which I had some understanding of as well anyway, but it was just so familiar to me. And I realized this is what I've been working with all this time. I've been working with estranged adults, adults who are estranged from one or more family members, irrespective of whether it was a son or a daughter or a parent or a sibling or a grandparent. Estrangement was the correct term. And not only that, but there was a whole body of research behind it, really high quality research, not necessarily a huge amount of research relative to how prevalent it is. And we'll talk about prevalence, I'm sure, today as well. But it also, because I was doing a dissertation, it gave me an opportunity to also contribute to that research. And after I'd finished my dissertation, I had a study, which was the experiences of family estrangement. I did eventually get published in the Family Journal in 2021, I think it was. And that paper is called The Changing Impact and Challenges of Family Estrangement. That has been my professional interest in this whole phenomenon. Obviously, a lot of time is spent trying to understand why people become estranged, getting a really strong sense of the reasoning or the big why, so to speak. But I felt, me personally, as a practitioner, I was more useful to my client in helping them understand how is it really affecting their day-to-day life and how we might resource our clients through a lot of those challenges. And there's quite a diverse set of challenges. I tend to break it down into 3 categories: the psychological, which encompasses mental and emotional impact. There's the relational impact, so the impact they might be having with their partner, with their own kids, if they're estranged from a parent, their impact of their relationship with their friends, but also with themselves. And then the social impact, the social ramifications of being estranged from family members. So how do you explain your situation to other people? What happens if you have to attend an event, such as a wedding or a birthday party or a Christmas party or whatnot, where estranged family members are there? How do you manage that dynamic? And that became the estrangement impact triad. It was the term I called it. And then after that, I started to slowly train therapists, particularly around the complexities of family estrangement, in terms of identifying what it is, what it looks like, and again, how it might affect their clients and what they might do to better resource their clients, or at the very least, better validate those experiences.
We are going to define family estrangement because you talked about some of the ways you experienced it as you stumbled on it. I think another way people in the systemic therapy and MFT world view family estrangement is cut off. And there can be, again, psychological cutoff, physical cutoff, emotional cutoff, as Murray Bowen would talk about, even when you have to see these people. You talked about those 3 components: psychological, relational, and social. Let's define family estrangement.
So starting with the definition, and I think this is where we hit the first major problem, is that there is no singular definition. is actually about 8. I define 8 in the book. There could even be more. And obviously, each researcher, when they're doing a piece of research, they have to create a clear definition for the cohort they're going to interview as part of their research, whatever the type of research is. But obviously, if they're honing in on certain areas, their definition may focus on that, or they may narrow their definition to hit a certain cohort. So for example, I have seen family estrangement defined as a complete cutoff from family. But the problem is that you said it there, like it sits on a continuum. So there are people who quite frequently talk to their family and yet they would still be considered estranged. I know other people view estrangement as the breakdown of a supportive relationship from family members, but which is a good definition. The problem with it is that there were some people would say that my family have never supported me. So does that mean we've always been estranged? Or are they saying that the estrangement began at the point where they stopped supporting me? So there's multiple definitions. I don't think any one definition is incorrect. For the purposes of my work, I'm looking for clients who are in the middle of a process, and it's a distancing process where they are very consciously creating some form of distance from their family members. Now, that word consciously has to be underlined and in bold, because estrangement is not the same as losing touch. It's not the same as just normal arguments that happen in family, the normal conflict, because family life can be difficult, it can be stressful, and people sometimes have disagreements. And they make up short periods where they're not talking, but this is different. This is very much an ongoing process where people are very willingly trying to create distance from each other. But that distance sits on a continuum, as I say. And on one end, we have those we would say are on the less estranged end of it, or possibly a better term to describe it is emotional estrangement, or maybe even another way to say it is low contact. That means that these people would frequently interact for a whole range of reasons. Sometimes it's because of obligation, because of loyalty, because of change in circumstances. For example, if someone is quite sick in the family, perhaps a parent, then estranged siblings may have to interact with each other on a regular basis to manage that situation and offer care. It could be habit. Some people just visit on certain days. If they're going back to the family home, for example, and someone is estranged for a sibling, and then maybe just a habit of returning to the home on a certain day. It could also be due to pressures. For example, if siblings are estranged, I know I'm honing in a little bit on sibling estrangement, but obviously this could be affecting many different family members. But if somebody has kids and they're estranged from several family members, but they don't want their kids to suffer, they want their kids to still have a relationship with their grandparents or with their cousins, that may prompt them to maintain contact with them. But what makes it that estrangement, specifically about estrangement, is it's what they're sharing or not sharing with their family members. They're only there because they feel like they have to be, not because they want to be. And they're withholding aspects of themselves, their private life. So they're not necessarily the engagement, the amount of conversations these have, or the quality of the conversation is quite poor. And it's often very stressful for these people because they are still very much in the middle of the dynamic that's causing this rift in the first place. Often I see with the families where there's estrangement, there's patterns of avoidance and withdrawal that happens again. And there could be historical precedent around not addressing issues, pushing stuff under the carpet. And as a result, it can be really stressful being around that dynamic. But that's one end of the continuum. The other end of the continuum are those we would say are more estranged, or that could be more akin to a physical estrangement or no contact. And these are more extreme examples where people go to great lengths to have absolutely no interaction with their family at all. And I've had clients who literally travel the world. I've had clients who are Irish, but they're living in Australia, they live in the US, live in different parts of the globe. And they publicly, they would tell people they love to travel, they will see the world. Privately, they tell me their family is one of the core reasons why they wanted to get away, because it was so stressful, it was so damaging to them, and they really struggled to make sense of it, or to certainly to live with it. And they felt the only way for them to feel safe and to feel some measure of security was to put that distance from their family. And that concept, the estrangement continuum, just to reference the researcher, Christina Sharp coined that term. It's a really important finding. I always find the estrangement continuum. I'm going to clinically, when I work with my own clients, I need to know where they sit on that continuum. Do they interact on a regular basis, or are they on the other side of the planet? Because it tells us a lot around how damaging the family dynamic was, but also the type of challenges they're dealing with day to day. So for example, someone who does regularly interact with their family, they will have a different set of challenges from the person who does live on the other side of the world. Who maybe they don't have that kind of difficult situation where what do I share, what do I not share, do I go to this event, do I not go to this event. To them, it's almost much more of an existential crisis around the bigger decision to pull away, and did they make the right decision, and are they going to regret it later on, should they reconnect. And they're quite, even the people who pull away and we call them voluntarily estrangement, the ones who live in different parts of the country or different parts of the world, that distance doesn't always give them peace. Okay, it doesn't always give them that sense of safety. And again, as clinicians, we're trying to meet our clients where they are. We're trying to meet their challenges, their unique challenges. And every estrangement is different because every family is different. But having an overview and an understanding of family dynamics, of estrangement dynamics and that estrangement landscape that each client is going through, we might be in a better position to, again, at least validate that. And the research around the experiences of estranged adults going to therapy, key to this is that validation. And it's not new. We can go back to Rogers. He was saying this for many years. And as therapists, we know this. If we can just meet our clients exactly, not trying to change them, not trying to label anything good or bad, it's just meet them exactly with that so they feel heard, they feel seen. That can be incredibly therapeutic. But there are often roadblocks to that as well.
You mentioned the research. Any other interesting findings as you have been digesting these material over the last years that you think is worth sharing?
Yeah. So even just with my own study, if you hone in that, one thing, it was specifically about the challenges and the impact of estrangement, but how it changes over time. And time is a really important dimension when we talk about family issues. But in terms of the impact, okay, one thing that we need to consider is whether an estrangement was chosen or not. Okay, whether it was voluntary or involuntary. And I know with my own participants, it was predominantly sons and daughters who were voluntarily estranged from their parents. And then when I work with parents, they are involuntarily estranged from sons and daughters. But the experience of choosing it versus unwittingly being cut out, so to speak, or being distanced from it, it definitely informs the type of challenges that they're facing, particularly psychological. For example, those who are involuntarily cut out, it may not have been explained to them correctly or properly what happened. Excuse me, they're left with this massive question mark over the head, like, why? Why has this happened to us? What did I do? And in some cases, maybe there's elements of avoidance where they're not actually really looking at themselves honestly. But often, especially with the parents I work with, they're really decent people. They're very reflective. They're very transparent. They would say, look, of course, we made mistakes, but we did our best, but we still don't understand why this has happened to us and why it's happened now or when it happened. The flip side of that are those who are involuntarily estranged. In some cases, they actually get an initial sense of relief because the dynamic within the family was so damaging and so stressful that just making that choice, I'm pulling back, I can't deal with this anymore, they got a sense of autonomy over their life and over their health. And that was very reassuring for them. Now, that doesn't always last. And sometimes after that initial period, then they're back in this kind of ruminative phase where they're just playing the whole dynamic over in their head, going back and forth and trying to decide, do they connect? Do they reconnect? Do they keep pulling back? And it keeps people quite stuck in that situation. And what's interesting, I found with the findings, because time is a factor. It's particularly a problem in the first few years of estrangement, where it's all very fresh and very raw. A lot of people, first of all, are not comfortable talking about it in the first year. That's one thing I found. It's too soon. The situation is still too new. It's up in the air. They're not sure where it's going to go. But they're also very fearful of consequence by talking about it publicly. And those fears may be irrational in the sense that I don't know their family. There's no chance of anything what they're saying to me is ever going to go back to their family. Nonetheless, those fears are grounded in actual experiences, possibly of rejection from their family members. And we have to obviously respect that and be compassionate towards it. But at those early stages, it's just being conscious that it may not be right. Even if a client presents and they're estranged, knowing that it's still relatively recent, they may not be prepared to go into it in much depth just yet. But then what I found with the participants where it had gone on for much longer, somewhere between 5 to 10 years, they had a lot of time to really reflect on it. And they had come to a realization that it was the best choice for them. But nonetheless, it's still a challenge because there's the remnants of the whole relationship, especially if there is abuse there. And often, I'm not saying every estrangement is a product of abuse, but there is sometimes abuse there. As we all know, I know you've interviewed Stephen Porges in this podcast, that those traumatic experiences stay deeply lodged in the nervous system and the body. And we have to work with our clients then in terms of trying to integrate a lot of those experiences so they can reconnect with their body, connect with the remnants of the trauma that they may have experienced. And also bear in mind, estrangement itself can result in a trauma. So it may not be the historical behaviors in the family that caused the trauma, but being cut out, but even actually willingly cutting someone out of your family, even though, again, initially there may be a sense of autonomy and control. Once that realization hits that, oh my God, like my family are gone from my life and that we may never reconnect and this is the reality of my life now, that can be quite traumatic as well. So I suppose the point I'm going to make with this, even though the findings are incredibly important, but it's complicated. There is no one universal experience. Yeah, there's insight that we can garner from trying to understand who the person is estranged from, understanding the nature of the estrangement, was it chosen or not, understanding the type of estrangement. For example, is it an emotional estrangement? Is it a physical estrangement? Is it an inherited estrangement? And what inherited means is that you may have clients come in who don't have a relationship with their grandparents because of maybe a divorce, maybe their husband, their parents divorced, and then there was no contact with grandparents after that. And there's no issue between them and their grandparents, but so they effectively inherited an issue that began with the parents and their divorce. As well, it's important to distinguish between primary and secondary estrangement. So for example, let's say you and me are brothers and we fall out and we become estranged. We would say that's a primary estrangement. But then if you're in a relationship with somebody and then I may become estranged from your partner and we could have been had really good relationship before and we could have been good friends, but your partner feels a loyalty towards you, obviously because you're in a relationship with them. So then all of a sudden we're secondarily estranged because again, nothing has happened between us, but someone feels like they need to take a side. Similarly, even if on my side, let's say again, we're brothers and we're estranged and I get on very well with your partner because of your closeness with your partner, I may choose to put distance from your partner as well. And as a result of that, again, that leads to a secondary estrangement. It just gives us insight into the complexity of these dynamics. But again, the type of challenges clients are going to have to face and also the choices that they're making, like why are they estranged from certain people? And you're not, we don't want to be, we have to be careful playing devil's advocate because we don't, again, minimize their experiences. But there's times I often ask my clients, particularly those who are closed off to support, who have inherited estrangements, do you need to be estranged from these people? Is there room for you to actually reach out and have a independent, separate relationship with these family members? Because they would love to have you in their life. Maybe they would love to support you. Maybe they are completely unbiased and they're not actually taking a side. They'd just be happy to have you in their life. But because of the situation, maybe they don't feel like they can reach out to you. And again, we never force a client to make a decision. They have to make decisions based on their own situation and their own life. But it just gives us insight into the dynamic and who is actually available support for these clients.
So what you just said, I would classify that is when you get a referral or you meet with a client or a system for the first time, you're assessing the type of estrangement. So the things you just talked to us about, I want to make sure I got all of them. It's the type of estrangement. Is it primary or secondary? The severity, is it going from, we still see this person or these people, but it's awkward or there's certain areas we don't go, or is complete cut off, emotional and physical, no contact at all. Then you're assessing for the choice. Is it voluntary? As you mentioned, usually, and this is my experience for the last 24 years as a systemic therapist too, if it's the children, especially from a difficult divorce or where there's been alienation or abuse, then it's voluntary. I choose not to have contact with you. But usually if it's the parent, it's involuntary. So there's the choice point. You talk about the time elapsed from when this estrangement happened to when they come to see you and the level of the trauma involved. And sometimes the estrangement itself, which I agree with you, is the trauma. So I think I got most of them there. But before we talk about intervening, yeah, let's talk about how this presents. And to me, when someone voluntarily comes to a systemic therapist to work on it, they usually don't say, help me with my family estrangement. They frame it more in the terms of boundaries. I have a boundary or they have trauma and they want help with that. Whereas the involuntary, the people that want contact back with their family member are just hopeless because they've reached out, they've tried, they're coming to someone like our listeners, like you and me, because they want to repair. And the challenge is working with those people where you know the other part of the system is not open. We talk often on the show about expanding the system, reaching out to people in the indirect system to create a repair. And certainly family therapy was based on a lot of powerful live demonstrations of doing that, creating connection, restructuring. But sometimes, in fact, many times that is not possible. So we have to work with what we're given.
So therapeutic outcomes and goals are really important, and it's important to establish those as quickly as we can. What I find out with my own clients is that they just come to talk. They don't even know where they want to go. They're not even sure what they actually want to do next. Now, some are clearer in terms of what they hope to get from therapy and what they expect from us or hope to gain from us. But it's not always the case. And that was the origins of the map, which I'll talk about in a second. The map was my effort or my attempt to create some structure around what they were presenting to me. But yeah, getting a sense of what they hope to get. And sometimes it is about reconnecting with family after a period of time. And what does that look like? What does that feel like for them? And again, to do that, we first obviously need to understand what the core problems were. And maybe it was down to unrealistic expectations. Maybe it was down to pressures. Maybe it was down to all the trappings that come with these type of family dynamics that cause estrangement in the first place. And time is spent trying to understand what happened. Like, how did it come to this place? How did it get so bad? And again, how long did it take to get to this place as well? Because if they haven't spoken to their family in a year or 2 years or years, or maybe it's months, we need to know that information, because again, it informs how delicate they need to be. Any reconnection is a very delicate process anyway. And one thing I always tell my clients, particularly my parents who are trying to reconnect with sons and daughters, like, they're playing a long game here. This is not a short exercise where there's one sit down and everything is fine. And you're right, many of the estranged parties are often very resistant to attend therapy. So in my case, and a lot of my, I do work family with families, but a lot of it is just individuals who would are yearning that reconnection, but it's just they haven't been able to make it work, and the person they're estranged from is close to them. In those instances, there's a tendency to focus on the problems. I'm always trying to find the things that bridge people, that bring people together, like common interests, hobbies, experiences, places, venues, things. We're looking for reasons that they may create a scenario where estranged parties may want to actually spend time with them and feel safe doing so. And at the initial stage, it's almost more about quantity versus quality. And by quantity, just minutes together in a room where two nervous systems just be re-familiarizing each other with just being in each other's company. And often there's so much pressure around this desperate yearning to reconnect and make the situation better that people jump in to heavy conversations very quickly. And it's sometimes too soon. And if somebody's putting up all those roadblocks, it's very much trying to tease those blocks, those barriers down, and then may eventually open the conversation. Or maybe it never will. Maybe it will never be comfortable going to that deeper place. It doesn't mean they can't have some kind of a relationship. And again, part of it may be reestablishing what reconnection means. Are they okay having a different type of relationship with this people, the strange parties, for a period of time, maybe forever? And some people are okay with that, and some people aren't okay with that. Especially if they've been hurt badly, they want the issues addressed. They want some of them at least validated. And they won't entertain a relationship with the strange parties until this situation has happened, where this conversation has happened. Again, the client has to decide that for themselves. We try to understand what they need from us, and we try to help them as best we can. Again, the other side, as you said, Eli, is like a lot of my own clients, either they've no desire themselves, or the people that they're estranged from have no desire. They're close to them. So then it becomes this exercise of, number one, helping them make sense of this, trying to find some meaning. And it's their meaning. It's not our meaning. So we can't tell them what the meaning is. It just takes time to really sit with them, give them space to grieve a lot of this. Now, the problem, the grief that comes with this type of loss, and estrangement is absolutely a loss, a very complicated loss. I saw you at Pauline Voss on this, and she talks about ambiguous loss. This is you'll find Pauline's work is really emphasized in the estrangement literature as well, because it's that really ambiguous. Will we reconnect? We rot reconnect? What has happened? It's basically a loss with a question mark. We're not really sure what the relationship status is, what the future of the relationship will be. Is it dead? Are we never going to have a relationship again? And because of that, coupled with the challenges of being estranged in contemporary society, where people will ask you difficult questions and they may react badly, because I do find in our society, particularly with social media, people are very quick to form opinions with very minimal information and very hard to feel safe. If someone is carrying trauma, and you know, underpinning that trauma is this profound sense of loss, but they can't touch it because they're so dysregulated all the time. Maybe our work as clinicians is just help them feel connected to us as therapists, help them resource them through safety exercises. And maybe over time, they may go more deep into the actual loss that they've experienced. And even if they do reconcile, they're still lost there. There's a loss of time. There's loss of clarity around the relationship. Sometimes people are shocked that they became estranged. They just didn't see it happening. And that's a massive loss in itself. That sense of safety that, oh, we're fine, like nothing, we will always be okay. And then the rug is just pulled from underneath them. And again, we're just trying to acknowledge all of these types of losses and how it affects the client and give them space to be able to process it. And then at the end of that, maybe they'll come to their own conclusions in terms of how the next step. Is it from that place? Maybe they need to reconnect from that place, or maybe it's moving on. But just to go back to the topic of time, one pressure I see with all my own clients is that variable of time. And they always feel like, or very often they feel like, if they don't fix it soon, time will run out. That it has to be done urgently, it has to be done now. And again, that speaks to the experiences of rejection, those experiences of loss, and feeling like they don't want that to happen again, because these are obviously very powerful experiences. But my own clients, I really try to encourage them to stop the clock and slow down completely, because from that dysregulated, anxious, desperate place, they often make poor decisions. They're not coming from a place of security or a place of really thinking through what's the best course of action. And that's a very difficult thing to do, because it is their family. It's probably someone that they love deeply. They are very affected by it. It's probably affecting other areas of their life as well. And I was talking about the social ramifications of estrangement, one of which is estranged people are expected to function in society. They're expected to just show up for work every day and perform and go to family or friends' birthday parties and celebrations and events, and their loss goes unrecognized. Their struggles and their challenges goes completely unrecognized. And I've had clients, another finding actually from my own research was that some of the participants were making mistakes in work because they were distracted, because this situation was so consuming and they couldn't find an answer. They were ruminating so much about it that they were distanced, they weren't as focused, they weren't paying attention, and they started to make mistakes in work. Now, the impact in their job was quite minimal, but it was devastating to them that it was affecting this aspect of their life, that it was contaminating something that was very important to them, because a lot of my clients are very career oriented, highly skilled. They really want to do well on their job. And now all of a sudden, not only have they lost their relationship with their family and it's affecting them deeply, but now it is taking this other toll in other areas of their life. And again, being able to acknowledge that and resource them through that. And one of the resourcing strategies I do with my own clients is helping them park the situation as best we can. And there's a whole set of exercises in the book where I talk about parking strategies, stuff like really some of it's basic stuff like journaling, which, you know, it's very mainstream topic now, but often estranged people don't think of journaling. And if I can get a client to just put aside 30 minutes in the evening or in the morning or time that suits them and just write down what's on their mind, what they're feeling today, what they're thinking about today, what they're worried about, what challenges they have in that day, it just give them that window of opportunity to put it down and do something like literally tactile and sit down and write it down. And then physically close the notebook and put the pen down. And that could be symbolic of actively deciding that's enough of this today. And I'm going to go off and spend time with my partner, my kids, or whoever's part of their life, or go off and self-care or do their exercise or whatever they need to do to effectively put an exclamation mark at the end of just that day and their estrangement situation. And maybe they can move forward. Because again, the duration of estrangement is so variable. And even the research suggests it can go anything from 1 to 9 years. But in my own case, with many of my clients, it is permanent. Like some, it's gone on for decades and it doesn't appear to be any resolution. There doesn't seem to be any change. And I don't know if you see this, Eli, with your own clients, but one sense I get with many of my own, particularly when their family won't come to therapy, is that their clients are exactly where they left them. And it's just this sense that my clients, again, you may have this as well, where they're voracious readers, like they really try to understand their own psychology and they're trying to understand relationships. And there's actually growth in their situation, even though they're incredibly hurt and painful because of the estrangement. There's an element of growth there because they're expanding their understanding, they're expanding their language, their toolbox for self-regulation. But their family is exactly where they left them because they're not reading books, they're not going on websites, they're not educating themselves. They're pretty much stuck within that system or within the problems within that system. And again, helping our clients make sense of that so they don't just keep repeating this cycle of reconnecting back in, hoping for change and nothing changes.
You're speaking to something I think resonates with our listeners out there that work with somebody involuntarily estranged or cut off. I'll share some clinical stories. So I'm working with this woman right now who was a very successful artist and teacher and created a large following. And her daughter was also artistic, but could never fill mom's shoes. And one day, the daughter in her late 20s or early 30s just decided, I'm done with you, mom. And mom then tried desperately to repair, but the daughter created a geographic and a emotional barrier. And much as you said, this person first wanted to reach out through therapeutic means to have a neutral party facilitate a repair, but there was complete cut off. The daughter wanted no part of that. The woman, again, was an avid consumer of self-help literature, trying to understand, do her own work. And the challenge with that is that outcome has to shift. When you are working with someone involuntarily cut off or estranged, and they have tried to reach out, apologize for what they know, because sometimes the person doesn't even know, in this case, the depth of how they have hurt or upset the other person. Sometimes the trauma or the abuse is obvious and the reason for the cutoff is obvious. But in this case, this woman, her shift became, the only thing I can do is control myself. So it was reading, it was finding comfort in friends that became like family, but this is her only child, her daughter. And this cutoff, it spanned the birth of a child, this woman's grandchild that she had never met, back to what you were saying, the generational effect and the secondary estrangement. So the work became, again, validating the space of what she's tried, her knowledge about herself, and her art was very therapeutic for her. You talked about journaling. I'm curious your thoughts on ways to help people shift when it is not going to happen, when you do not have a chance as the therapist to facilitate a repair for between the different members of the estranged system, working with that individual to help them adapt, cope, and redefine their life with this ambiguous loss, as we spoke to.
Yeah, very true. And it's interesting. One of the resources in the toolbox, I think art, I certainly have creativity there as well. And you're right, that's a really powerful way to express what's happening inside. I think with my own clients, it's very much, they're so caught up in this dynamic, they can't actually see their own pain. They can't see the impact that it's have on them. And it's trying to help them connect with that. And there's all different ways. I'm a somatic practitioner. I've studied sensory motor psychotherapy. And again, it's bringing the body into the conversation can be quite useful for them. Even just to notice patterns of posture or the way their voice might change, avoiding eye contact, the energy in their body. Sometimes it's very obvious. And obviously, I'm predominantly online at the moment, have been for a couple of years. But you can still, through the monitor, still see a lot of movement, especially in the shoulders. But similarly, no movement as well. When someone is just frozen in that kind of state where there's so little movement in their body and their pitch of their voice, even with eye contact. So sometimes somatically helping them connect with that and resourcing them through that can be very useful. Yeah, journaling is useful. In fact, funny enough, again, we might come back to the estrangement map concept because that was part of it as well. Just to explain what an estrangement map is. So basically, it's a table. If you were to visually look at a map, it's a table with seven columns. And each column represents an important characteristic of an estrangement. Today, we were talking about, first of all, listing who the estranged parties are. Who was the person estranged from? What's the type of the estrangement? Is it primary, secondary? Is it emotional and physical? The nature, was it voluntary, was it involuntary? When or how was it communicated is important as well. Because we need to know the methods of communication that they're using. Is it email? Is it phone? Is it WhatsApp? And often that might highlight that's the preferred method, but it also might show that people are stuck in just one medium and they're just writing letters or they're just using emails. And now with technology, we have all these incredible mediums available to connect and using more dimension. I'm a fan of WhatsApp voice notes and even WhatsApp video. If somebody was to send that, it's not just words. It's actually seeing someone's eyes, their face, hearing their voice. That might mean that their words can be heard a little bit better. And then other dimensions included the map, including the dimension of time that we mentioned, how long are they estranged for? And the last is the reasons why they feel they became estranged. And again, we would write down not knowing the reason is important to that as well. But the reason I created this mapping, it was more for my own benefit at the start, because I started to post more stuff on social media around family estrangement. The clients were seeking me out, but because they'd watched me on video talking, it cut through a lot of the initial process of building that therapeutic alliance and building rapport. They felt like they knew me earlier than it normally would take. And they would jump into their family dynamic really quickly. And sometimes it was confusing for me to make sense of. So you're not talking to this person, and but that person's part of it. And you don't see them, but you might talk to them. So in my head, I was like, okay, I need to find a way of putting some structure to this. And I went back to the initial research I'd done, and I'd created kind of an overview chart, a participant overview chart for the academic panel, looking at reviewing my paper. And I thought, look, maybe there's a bit of structure there. I adapted that to create this mapping process. And I'd get my client to sit down and draw it out, write out your estrangement landscape. Who are you estranged from? And what would happen is, often they would start with the primary people that they're estranged from, whether it was a parent or a son or daughter. And I would ask them, no, let's expand that. Are you sure you're not estranged from somebody else as a result of this? And we came to the realization that there was extended families that they hadn't seen, cousins, aunties, uncles, grandparents that were part of this, but they hadn't really considered it. I tried to even bring more depth into it. What else did you lose here? And often they lost elements of nostalgia. For example, if it's a son or daughter estranged from a parent, that parent could have pictures, they could have toys, they could have elements that were important to their childhood that are lost to them. They also may be losing medical knowledge around their family history. For example, if someone is sick now, there could be a historical preference or precedence, but they don't have, because of that, there's no relationship with their parents or somebody else in the family, they don't know. But a key thing that they're losing, and you spoke about it already, is that sense of identity. Who am I now that I'm not the person that I was? Like, particularly for parents, they obviously lean heavily on that role of being a mother or father, and they're not able to be that mother and father now. How do I identify myself? How do I derive worth and value for myself when I can't be this person? And it's a very difficult thing to come to. And again, therapeutically, we often lean on their strengths and their coping mechanisms, trying to understand how they got through all this up to now. Because if they're talking to us, then they've survived. Okay, even if it's recent, they've found a way to get by, to get to the point where they're talking to us, and there's a strength to that. So we can help them to really see their strengths, see their core values, all those different adaptive, healthy coping mechanisms. We need to recognize the unhealthy ones as well, because unfortunately they exist. But again, lean on those as strengths, and maybe that might help them to get a different sense of who they are and their value and worth to the world. Another part of that is exploring their social network and who's there, and lean on how these people view them as well, because they don't just view them as in one role as a parent or as a son and daughter. They just see them as a person that they love and they value for their personality. And often it's spending more time around these people to help them get a better sense of, I am someone that I'm not just a parent, or I'm not just a son and a daughter, I'm not just a sibling, I'm somebody else as well. But just one other thing I want to say, and another concept I mentioned in the book is the estrangement radius. And this is the social network of people who are directly or indirectly affected by an estrangement. And you spoke about your client there, and she's an artist, and she had some of a bit of a profile, maybe a bit of celebrity, maybe a bit of, she's known for her work. That presents a new challenge, particularly if, and I wouldn't suggest that she ever talks about estrangement publicly, but sometimes when a high profile person, their estrangement is out there, it creates a new problem, because then anybody knows about your situation, and at any point anybody could bring it up. And I've seen this before, even some of my own clients who might be high profile, and at one point they may share it. But just because they've shared it once doesn't mean they want to talk about it again going forward. But often they're put in this difficult position, sometimes very embarrassing situation, where they're being asked about it by someone that they don't even know. But they feel like they know this person, and they feel like because they spoke about it before, it's a safe topic and they can discuss it. So that speaks to the safety element and how it's so hard to feel safe when you're estranged and it's out there publicly. Should you talk about it publicly? Should you? And it's interesting with social media, I don't know if you found this as well, there's a real push. People are really sharing their story, sharing their journey, sharing their struggles, which is great, okay, because we learn through stories. We derive strength from other people's struggles. But with estrangement, it's different, because could there be consequences of that sharing? Will it make the situation worse? Will there be negative consequences from family, or will they have their boundaries crossed by someone they don't even know about?
When you make it public like that, I think also if you are the person setting the boundary, it makes it much harder than to move toward forgiveness. So in our last couple minutes, I wanted to give you another story and an example from the other side of the coin. So this is a client, adult child who had been estranged from their parent for about 15 years and had held the boundary. The short story is that the father had an affair on the mother, and broke up the whole family. And this was one of these idyllic families that they'd never fought. So the children, in this case, my client, and this happened when she was a teenager, was devastated. So she held this boundary for 15 years through wedding, birth of child, even changed her last name. And then she appeared, presented to me because she said, I'm struggling with this. I have found out through these extended family members that my father is dying of cancer. And the father had apparently written her letters every year, multiple letters. She never opened them. She ripped them up, but he had never stopped trying, but she was not open to it. I want you to talk about the concept of when somebody like that, when there is a life event, in this case, a death, a birth, a wedding. So forgiving can be very powerful for someone that has voluntarily set the estrangement. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to go on to have a relationship. So for this woman, the short story is she was able to honor her work by forgiving her father. She did not actually want to see him, but she wrote him a letter that acknowledged many things that she had not previously done in the fact that he was a good father and he was maybe a bad husband, but he was a good father. And she wished him that he could die knowing that, but she did not wish to reestablish contact. But it was what she thought was the right thing to do. And it was the product of a lot of work, a therapist validating her, her getting input from her own support network, including her family. So there's a powerful moments when you can get estranged people together and create a repair. And that is wonderful. And that's why many of us do this work. But as we've said in our hour today, that many times that's not possible. But I thought I'd get your thoughts on helping the voluntarily estranged to work on forgiveness and letting go.
Yeah. So forgiveness is, again, another kind of complicated dimension to it because it's a deeply personal, subjective process. Even though we as clinicians know, like you would benefit from letting go of all the stuff people carry inside them, and it, which keeps them enmeshed as well in the family system, because it's very hard to be free and live your life with autonomy when you're still harboring so much anger and resentment for what has happened in the past, particularly with a parent, but it could be with any family member. But at the same time, some people are just not ready. And when somebody is ready is impossible to guess. But I think as therapists, our role is not to tell people when to forgive, but more so finding ways to do that letting go process. And again, it could be symbolic. It could be just through conversation anyway, through discourse, maybe an element of psychoeducation in terms of understanding why people are unfaithful in marriages, patterns of unfaithfulness. Even if there's elements of narcissism, again, understanding how somebody would become a narcissist and how it's often the product of both biology and environment as well, where to the point where a narcissist may have choice, they this is who they are, they're worried a certain way, and they can't change. They're incapable of offering compassion or meeting people or attuning to people. Maybe through that insight and through education, maybe people might reach a point where I have to let go of this now because it is what it is. But again, it's very personal. The flip side is I've seen people force themselves to try to forgive when they weren't ready. And particularly when they're still traumatized and still dysregulated, it creates a confusion because one part of them wants to forgive, another part of them still feels the impact of whatever dynamic happened in the family. Maybe not in this instance of the girl or the father was unfaithful, but I know particularly when there is abuse in families, the impact of that abuse obviously lingers for the rest of a person's life until they find the right coping mechanisms and the right strategies to integrate. But again, it's a case of, well, let's just rework with the impact and let them come to that outcome themselves where it's time to let go or it's time to forgive organically, where it makes sense to them at that point there, not before the fact. And again, it's a process. But it's also, again, defining what letting go means. And you're right, it doesn't mean you're reestablishing connection. Letting go of, making it clear in their own mind what exactly they're letting go of. And maybe she had to let go of the 15 years that she wasn't there, letting go of the impact. Because if a daughter could be very close to her mother, she was probably highly sensitive to her mother and the impact it had on her. She was probably very devastated. So maybe this was her mother's devastation as well as her own. Again, letting go of the dream family life that she had before then as well. So I think it's not just simply a broader term of letting go. It's being clear, what does letting go mean to them? What is it that they need to let go of and how we might facilitate that? And again, it could be through art therapy. It could be through journaling. It could be just discourse and meeting them with compassion and acknowledging this has really taken a toll on them and how devastating it would be to have, again, the perfect family dynamic devastated possibly overnight and without apparent reason or cause. And it can be quite devastating. And just to say, if I was to condense the essence of my message to people, and again, I'm speaking preaching to the choir here because this is a family therapist potentially who listen to this, like, never take your family for granted, because you just, you know, I've seen really strong, healthy families fall apart, sometimes over very serious things. For example, a traumatic loss, a sudden sickness can create ripples because of changes in dependencies within the family. But I've seen families fall apart over really trivial things, or things that appear to be quite trivial, that probably could have been bashed out at the right time with the right people. It could have been resolved, but it wasn't. And it just lingered and it went on and on. And unfortunately, it didn't get resolved properly.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I'll even add to that. I always tell my students and the students I supervise that doing your own work, we've all probably experienced some degree of estrangement in our family of origin, some of us more than others. So it could be a block, an interface issue, a counter transfer. And so I always think doing your own work. I go and see my person still when I need to, when something comes up. So I can't agree with you more. And Carl, you are a passionate guy. But tell us again the book, and then carlmelvin.com. What can we find on there?
Thank you. So the book is Navigating Family Estrangement, and the subtitle is Helping Adults Understand and Manage the Challenges of Family Estrangements. And so the book was my attempt at creating a clinical guide for professionals of all different backgrounds, not just therapists. I would work a lot with social workers, with guidance counselors, mediators, and estrangement has implications across so many fields in healthcare and different sectors of life. And again, it was my attempt to create something that was offer some clarity to this topic. Yeah, the website is carlmelvin.com. It will be retooled pretty soon. At the moment, it's predominantly a blog. I do have some courses there. I have some on-demand courses that offer CPD. I think you call it CE, don't you? Continuing education in America?
We do, yes.
Yeah. We call it education. It's CPD here, continuing professional development. But it's the same thing. There's certificates there at the end of that. It may offer insight. I have courses happening this year. So just go onto the website. There'll be stuff there. I'm always delivering some kind of training. And it's split between people who are estranged and trying to help them make sense of their challenges and how we might help them, but also the professionals who are working with them as well, because they need support. And the more insight they have around us, the more they can better serve their clients and we can get really good outcomes and hopefully reduce the toll estrangement is taking on society.
You also have a great YouTube channel that would help both therapists and potential clients and the consumer alike, where you can get a lot of this helpful information. You are a wealth of knowledge. Thank you so much, Carl Melvin, and we're glad that you were our first Irish guest.
Yes, thank you so much. And it's a pleasure. It's lovely to meet you. And yes, it's an honor to be the first Irish guest.
Eli, back with you, bringing to a close another informative installment of the AAMFT podcast. Did you know that AAMFT is active on all your favorite social media channels? Be sure to follow us, the AMFT, on Instagram, X, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the world of AMFT? You can always find the back installments of the podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcast. I am partial to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but it's on Google Play, Stitcher. So please, if you're new to us, check out back installments where we tackle the latest trends and events impacting the world of systemic therapy, like today. And I have a number of pioneer interviews, which is some of my favorite interviews to conduct over the years. You can drop me a line at elikaram.com, where you see everything going on in my world, including two books that are out. One for our young professionals, Marriage and Family Therapy, National Exam, Your Guide for Success. That's from Springer. And that will prepare you for the national exam, including 360 practice questions, a full-length mock exam, proven strategies and tips for test taking. And it's organized to match the domains of the licensure exam. And then if you're interested in these common factors that we always talk about on the show, including what makes a motivated client, how you build, nurture, and repair a therapeutic alliance, how you maximize your own therapist factors. You want to check out my book, Bringing Common Factors to Life in Couple and Family Therapy from Rutledge. As always, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, my friends, stay safe, stay systemic.
After the line of MF show, the latest insights of love, countless family therapy, problem of feeling. Stay systemic, my friend. To be like education, innovating, and stay systemic, my friend. Hear the latest debate with our guests and topics we illuminate. From theory to practice, there's so much to know.